We're in Ecclesiastes. We're at this section I call it Solomon's longest rant. He just kind of rants for a long time. But the whole premise is he's driving at this question, and then everything changes in the rest of the book. So it's the end of chapter 12, chapter 6, verse 12. He says this: "For who knows what is good for a man while he lives, the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow?" That's the whole end of this rant. What's the good life? If you were to write down what your good life is, what would it be? For young people, it seems to be the number one thing: be famous on YouTube. Get 10,000 followers on TikTok. If you're at the other end, it's, I can't wait to retire. I want to have fun. I want to hang out with my buddies. I want to eat good food. I want to have great hair. I want to have a great body. I want to do great things. What's your definition of a good life? So in this long rant, I call it the bridge to nowhere. Solomon is going to point out these things that he says, they won't get you the good life. It's not going to happen through these ways. So we're just going to look at those. And in the middle, he does give a little hint at the good life. And then if you read ahead in chapter 7, you're going to see he actually dives into it. So chapter 7 is the hinge chapter, and the rest of the book changes on that hinge. So first thing he says is this: the government will not get you the good life. Surprise, surprise. Verse 8, chapter 5. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and righteousness, do not be amazed at the matter, for the high official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. But this is gain for a land in every way, a king committed to cultivated fields. The government will not get you the good life. And remember, Solomon's the king. He is the government back then. He's the guy. So do not be shocked by bad government. And I think you guys get this 100% because you're still living in Oregon. You haven't left yet. So you get it. Now, why is government messed up? Because it's crooked people ruling over crooked people. And you end up with all kinds of pretzels. That's just what happens with government. It's complicated. It gets more complicated. Like a year and a half ago, I had this guy that I've been walking with and trying to help him. And for a long time, I've known him for a long time. And he's having a custody thing with one of his kids. And he says, man, I'm trying to figure this thing out. I'm trying to navigate this system. And I don't know what to do. And so I said, give me your case number and give me the phone number. So I call Salem. And I think that I'm a decently intelligent man. Not after that conversation. After 35 minutes, I gave up to him. I'm like, bro, I can't help you. I have no idea. This system is insane. I'm sorry. And that's what government is. It just, you know, it's always growing. It adds more layers. That's what this text was saying. One official's overlooked by another official, which is overlooked by another official. So you try to like navigate through. You're like, well, I can't answer that. You got to talk to this person. Okay, I'll talk to you. Right? It's layer after layer after layer after layer. Don't be shocked by bad government. And the other thing that government, I don't think they actually can have in our system, is they can't have common sense. And I don't mean that as a dig. I mean, like, there has to just be like this, it has to be like this even thing. So you can't use common sense. I'll give you an example of how this worked out. So 20 years ago when Edgewater formed, we said, like, day one, we're going to set aside this amount of money to help people, just people that are down. This is 2005. Things were going really good then, but then we had the 2008 crash. And a lot of young men ran out of jobs. People didn't have work. So we had this policy that was, we won't give you a handout, but we'll give you a hand up. We'll find a job for you. So So if you need money as a young man or a man, come and we will get you some work and we will pay you at the end of that day for the work that you've done. We had so many men back then. Like all the time, men were up. Hey, work, work, work. Today, there's none. It is rare to have that same thing happen. What happened in the 20 years? Government organizations got a lot more money. So one time I just counted them up. The ones in Oregon that get a lot of government money that help out. Like in Grants Pass, there are 14 organizations that get millions of dollars every single year to help people. Well, Matt, isn't that a good thing? Well, it's the common sense that's the problem. So I'll give you a scenario that happened. There was a lady, she had a daughter. Daughter kind of went crazy, partied, ended up getting pregnant, out of wedlock child. Just, she came in and said, hey, can you help us? I said, sure, love to help you guys. So we just sat down and said, hey, if you're gonna move back in with your mom and your daughter, here's some guidelines. Here's how this is gonna work. Can't go out partying anymore. You gotta be a good mom. You have this incredible opportunity to change some things and be something different. Here it is, your mom is opening her home to you. She's like, okay, agrees to all this. Then she starts to chafe under it, you know, like that happens, it's gonna. And well, we just kept trying to hold the line. Well, she went, and there are organizations that will pay your rent and give you money for food and pay off all your utilities and do all that. She went and found other things, got a different house, moved out with her mom, from her mom, took her baby with her, went back to partying, lost the child to foster care, and ended up homeless. Now, what happened there? No common sense. Common sense would have said, actually, where you're at right now with your mom is the best thing for you and your baby. And we're not gonna give you any money to leave that. But they can't actually have that common sense, can they? Because it's gotta all be fair and even. You can't just use common sense. You have to say, well, did you check all the boxes correctly? Even though we might know this is the wrong thing for you, doesn't matter. We gotta give you the money. And then the end is much worse than if they just stayed where they were supposed to. So Solomon is just saying, look out, look out. No common sense. Even rules that they've made. If you've ever read the book, The Big Short, such a fascinating book on the 2008 financial crisis and the laws that were put in because of political action and these groups that were pushing these laws in. And then there was a response to all that, but the response was just as bad. So it's just crooked people governing crooked people. What are you going to expect? But Psalm at the end, this verse 9 is brilliant. He says, here's the best government, a king who is committed to cultivated land. What he's saying is this, the best government is a government that says, we have these opportunities in our country, cultivated land. So we're gonna make sure that they're watered and fertilized so that anybody that has good seed can use those cultivated lands and make a living and do well. A free and fair opportunity for anyone that is a citizen of that country to use the cultivated lands to have opportunities. That's the best kind of government. Sadly, it doesn't exist because there's cronyism and PACs and my buddy and I'm gonna help him. But Solomon says that's the best one, free and fair for anyone to work on the cultivated lands. That's good government. So Solomon says, yeah, you won't find it in the government. Number two, he said, you won't find it in, I call it affluenza. Yes, it is a disease. Verse 10, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Just underline that, circle that, highlight that. That's one of the truest statements in Ecclesiastes. He who loves money will not be satisfied with money. Nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they increase who eat them. And what advantage has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of a laborer, whether he eats little or much. But the full stomach of the rich will not let him sleep. There is a grievous evil that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owner to his hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. And he is a father of a son, but has nothing in his hand. As he came from his mother's womb, he shall go again. naked as he came, and shall take nothing for his toil that he may carry away in his hand. This also is a grievous evil. Just as he came, so shall he go. And what gain is there to him who toils for the wind? Moreover, all his days he eats in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and anger. Affluenza will not get you the good life. Affluenza is the desire for a little bit more. That's how this text began. You're not going to be satisfied with your income. You're not going to be satisfied with money. One of my favorite quotes by Homer Simpson is he's talking to Mr. Burns, the billionaire, and he tells Mr. Burns, "You're the richest man I know." And Mr. Burns replies, "I know, but I'd trade it all for a little bit more." That's affluenza. It's acquisition without satisfaction, just more, 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 more. And Solomon says there's two problems with that. First problem is more money, more problems. The more money you have, the more mouths want to eat it. Now, for Solomon, it didn't help that he got married like every 15 minutes. Like, bro, stop getting married so much. You got 1,000 wives, that's going to be expensive. And you got 1,000 probably kids with them. So yeah, when Solomon says, "Where'd all my money go?" Yeah, your wives and your kids. That's where it all went. Mm-hmm. And he says, and even though you've got all this money, you're eating the kind of food that doesn't let you sleep. Do you know that there's first world problems that come from our diet? Because we eat poorly. We eat richly, but we eat poorly. And that way that we eat makes it so you can't sleep. So Solomon like nailed it all the way back then. The fact that I'm eating all this crazy food doesn't allow me to sleep. Maybe it's also worry and anxiety. He's spinning his head like, maybe he doesn't get enough exercise. Like, you know this, exercising helps you sleep better. But if you're really rich, 3,000 years ago, you were not in the field working hard. And he is jealous of the field worker because that guy snoozes so good. And the second problem is, money is insecure. Money is always saying, buy, buy. You can look at that two ways. Money is insecure. The one thing that we think money will get us, security, is the one thing it cannot guarantee us. Anyone know a rich person who's bankrupt? We have good family friends, man. They had this beautiful house in Carmel, like unbelievable. They don't have it anymore. Totally different life now. That's what happens. It happens fast. The one thing we think money is going to get us, security cannot. The economy changes. There's a war in Iran. Fuel prices go up. Ask Spirit Airlines what happened to them. Ask all the people that have bought stock in Spirit Airlines how they're feeling about that amount of money right now that's gone. Talk to people that worked at Enron. 25,000 people that worked at Enron lost $2 billion in their pension and $1.2 billion in their 401ks overnight when Enron collapsed. They thought they were secure. They thought, "Hey man, at retirement, I'm gonna buy that home by the lake and play golf all the time." I guarantee some of those 25,000 people that thought they were so secure with their pensions and their 401ks are right now working a fast food part-time job to make ends meet 20 years later. The one thing we think, that's gonna make me secure. No, it's not. And this guy at the end of his life, he's a miserable miser. He eats in darkness, vexation, sickness, and anger. Anyone know a happy miser? I don't think they exist. And right when I'm writing this sermon, it's Wednesday, I took a break and I was just reading the news and eating my lunch. And I came across this article. I couldn't believe it. Most Americans would give up nearly their entire paycheck for peace of mind, security, the one thing that money can't buy you. Affluenza won't get it for you. And remember, money's not the problem. Money's neutral. The Bible says it's the love of money that's the root of all kinds of evil. It's more, 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 more. It's affluenza. I gotta have more. Something that's supposed to serve us And as a great servant becomes a terrible master. Because our minds are not on Jesus Christ anymore, they're on cash money. And that is a quick way to misery. So government won't get you the good life. Affluenza won't get you the good life. Bucket list living won't get you the good life. Verse 1, chapter 6. There's an evil that I've seen under the sun, and it lies heavy on mankind. A man to whom God gives wealth, possessions, and honor, so that he lacks nothing of all that he desires. Yet God does not give him the power to enjoy them, but a stranger enjoys them. This is vanity. It is a grievous evil. I think this is Solomon's little, like, that's me. If a man fathers 100 children and lives many years so that the days of his life are many, but his soul is not satisfied with life's good things, and he also has no burial, I say that a stillborn child is better off than he, for it comes in vanity and it goes in darkness, and in darkness its name is covered. Moreover, it has not seen the sun or known anything, yet it finds rest rather than he. Even though he should live 1,000 years twice over, yet enjoy no good, do not all go to one place. All the toil of a man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied. For what advantage has the wise man over the fool? And what does the poor man have who knows how to conduct himself before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of the appetite. This also is vanity and a striving after the wind. Bucket list living. 3,000 years ago, the guy that was just talked about by Solomon here, nailing it, killing it. Money, check. Stuff, check. Honor, check. Kids, 100 kids. So 3,000 years ago, that was it. If you had a lot of kids, that meant you were killing it. God had blessed you. Kids were looked at as the number one thing. It meant, man, you are killing. He's got 100 kids. He's stoked. I'm not sure how stoked his wife is, but he's stoked. He's like, yeah, 100 kids. Long life. Like Solomon goes crazy. He lives 2,000 years. Would anyone in here want to live on this earth for 2,000 years? Raise their hand. No thanks, man. We're eternal. We're going to live forever. I don't want to be here for 2,000 years. But this guy, bucket list, he nails it. Everything you could have wanted 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, he's got it. But what's the problem with this man? Notice verse 2. God does not give him the power to enjoy them. He's got everything except the power from God to enjoy life. The psalmist puts it like this, Psalm 106. God gave them their requests, but sent leanness to their soul. Money, check. Honor, check. Kids, check. Stuff, check. Enjoyment? Nope. You can make all your requests in the world. God can answer everything that you ever thought you wanted, and you can have no enjoyment. Listen to me carefully. Success and enjoyment are not the same thing. We have been brainwashed since kindergarten to equate success with enjoyment. It's the greatest Ponzi scheme ever put on human beings, because success and enjoyment are not the same thing. We do this, we work, we toil, we go for it, we build everything in the wrong spot. And then we wonder why. Why am I not enjoying life? Because success and enjoyment are not the same thing, even though we've been trained like Pavlov's dogs from the time we were born to equate success and enjoyment. We build bridges to nowhere. Have you ever seen that picture? Have I showed it to you before? Have you seen this picture? This is the bridge to nowhere. Whoops. Man, I hate it when that happens. Like a lot of money to build that bridge in Honduras. Hurricane comes, moves the river. Sorry, yeah, you don't need that bridge anymore. How often is life like that? Oh man, I got all these plans. I'm gonna do all this stuff. You build the bridge and then like life moves and you're like, well, what just happened? Yeah, you built, I built. We are professionals at building life and bridges to nowhere. And we wonder what happened. We did this right here. It's because of verse 9. Like, better is the sight of the eyes than the wander of the appetite. I have that underlined in my Bible. Better is what's right here than this wandering appetite that's always out here thinking, oh, if only. Man, that is wisdom right there. This was brought home to me about 7 years ago. So I went with a group of men from Edgewater. We went up to Whitefish, Montana, and we spent about 6 days up there and went snowboarding or skiing, whatever we did for four of those days. Just super fun. Really good snowboarders, really good skiers in the crew. But I had my son Elijah, who was only 7 at the time. So he's just kind of getting into snowboarding and stuff, and he's not very fast. So I'm always like hanging back with him, and the guys are going like, one day it snowed 36 inches overnight. And Elijah, like when he was snowboarding, you could not see him. It was like a cartoon. You just see like the snow moving like a mole under the ground. Like, there he is, go catch him. Like it was crazy. So I'm always kind of hanging back and with him and dreaming, you know, appetite. So day three, three quarters of the day is over. It's like 2 o'clock. Mountain closes at 4. Kind of snowy, blistery day. And Elijah's like, I'm tired, Dad. I want to go home. I said, okay. So we are at this spot where you could snowboard or ski right down to our place. So went down there. I dropped him off. And then I thought, now I can go have fun. Now I can go fast. So I get back on. I get this lift. And I start running this lift. And I'm seeing there's a clock. I've seen how fast I could do it. And I was going fast. I don't want to brag, but I was awesome. Fifth time up, I'm riding the lift up. And you know what? There was like this moment. And it was this. I'd rather be with my son right now. I got off that lift and went home. I was building a bridge of nowhere. For 3.7 days, I was like, if only Elijah was faster. Oh man, we could have so much more fun. Instead of the side of the eyes, right there, enjoying him the way he is, how God, now I can't keep up with him. Now he just destroys me. He's waiting for me all the time. And we do this so much. We build bridges to nowhere. This is what Solomon is warning us about. Perspective. Sight of the eyes versus the wander of your appetite. You're gonna fight those two. Learn to enjoy the sight of your eyes, what's right in front of you right now. Enjoy it. Instead of, if only I was, if I just looked like that, if I just had this kind of a chin, whatever, there's always something. No, don't do that. And then Solomon has one last one, which probably is where a lot of people go. Fatalism, verse 10. Whatever has come to be has already been named, and it is known what man is, and that he is not able to dispute with one stronger than he. The more words, the more vanity, and what is the advantage to man? For who knows what is good for a man while he lives the few days of his vain life, which he passes like a shadow? For who can tell man what will be after him under the sun? Let me just translate that for you to make it much simpler. Here's what he's saying. Life is foreordained by one more powerful than you, and you will not argue with him. Or here's the Matt Heverly translation. God is sovereign, shut up. Fatalism. Is that true? Are we robots that have a blueprint the moment that we are born, and we for our entire lives are just like automatons just carrying out the blueprint that God has for us, spores on the winds of fate? Is that what we are? So C.H. Spurgeon, total sovereignty of God guy, 100%. He has this story where one of the people in his church was sick and he would not take his medication. So Spurgeon went to visit him. And when he got there, the man started talking theology, fatalism. And he said, Dr. Spurgeon, I don't know if I'm predestined to live or to die. To which Spurgeon said, if you don't take your medicine, you are predestined to die. If you do take your medicine, you're predestined to live. That we're not just robots carrying out some kind of blueprint. We have true volition of will, and the decisions that I make every single day affect my life. That if I sow good seed, Galatians 6, verse 7, man, I'm gonna reap the things of the Spirit. If I sow bad seed, I'm gonna reap destruction. That my decisions today and every day matter. That you and I are supposed to be good covenant partners with our Heavenly Father every single day, every single moment, because it's raising us and training us to be rulers and reigners with King Jesus for eternity, not robotic Stepford wives. But Solomon says, hey, no, it's not gonna happen. Read chapter 7, it's so good. He does a lot of betters. But right in the middle, I skipped it, because right in the middle, a lot of Ecclesiastes is circular like that. You gotta find the gem in the middle. The gem in the middle is, Solomon does say, here's how you live a good life. So let me read these, and then quickly, four things that I think lead to the good life. Government won't do it. Money's not gonna do it. Bucket list is not gonna do it. Fatalistic kind of, God is sovereign, I'm gonna just sit here until something happens, doesn't do it. But these four things will. Behold, verse 18. What I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil. This is the gift of God, for he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy. Best little phrase in the world. You want a good occupation? Be occupied with joy in his heart. Four things. Feast, work, relax, and shalom. Feast. Eat good food. I think food is a gigantic gift from God. The flavors, the colors, everything. Gigantic gift from God. Eat good food. If you read the New Testament carefully and the life of Jesus, what do you see Jesus doing all the time? Inviting himself to other people's house. Right? Hey, bro, I'm coming to your house tonight for dinner. Like, imagine if somebody did that. After this service, just a complete stranger comes up and says, hey, dinner tonight, your house. How would you feel about that? One guy's like, what's wrong with that? Well, there's a lot wrong with that. I'm just being like Jesus. No, it's not normal. Works for Jesus because he's God. We're not. What you see in the Gospels is Jesus having meals with all the wrong people all the time. That there's something brilliant about just getting together with people and eating food. I think church needs to recover the Sunday meal with family and friends. Just invite people over. Hey, let's have a meal. Let's talk. Let's get to know each other. That's number one, feast. Number two, work. Enjoy your toil. Okay. He has said this a lot. And figure out how to enjoy your toil. People look at how much time someone at their job spends thinking about getting another job, and the numbers are astronomical. About 50% of your time is thinking about getting a different job. Instead of like enjoying the job that you have and what you're able to do, it's always thinking about, man, I wish I could get a different job. I tell people this, the best time to change your occupation is when you really love the job you have. Because if you haven't figured out how to love the job you have right now, you're probably not gonna figure out how to love the next job. That's what Solomon's saying. Figure out how to love your job. There's a great Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs guy, TED Talk. And he said this, is what got me on it. He said, the worst advice I've ever heard is to do a job that fulfills your passion. He says, that's the worst advice. He said, the happiest people that I have met are people that come home from their work stinky. He said, literally, they have more, the word that he used was, they have more symmetry in life. that come home stinky. I love that. It's perspective. Monday morning, tomorrow morning, see the good in your work. Well, how? There's this story told about the building of the Westminster Abbey, just beautiful stone building. And three stonemasons were asked a question. The first stonemason was asked, hey, what are you doing? And the first stonemason said, I'm cutting stone. Second stonemason, hey, what are you doing? I'm making a living. Third stonemason, hey, what are you doing? I'm building a cathedral for the glory of God and the joy of his people. Same job. The last guy figured out how to enjoy his toil. I love what I've seen in 20 years. Like the switch in young men from like white collar jobs and I want to be a barista to blue collar. I love it. My son's going to be a plumber. I love it. He has the aptitude to go to college. He just wants, I want dirty hands. I want the grit. I want the smell. I want that. I love that. And there's a camaraderie now in that kind of crew. Like, man, we work hard. We don't want the AC. We don't want the office chair. We want the sewer smell and the black widows and the rats and the nastiness. Give us that. I love it. Because they found camaraderie in it. Yeah, this is what we do. We want smashed thumbs. Thank you very much. Praise God for smashed thumbs. I'm telling you, this one right here is a life skill. And it will pay you dividends 40 hours a week. Find the joy in your work. Like that stonemason, find the joy in your work. You can. Thirdly, relax. Twice Solomon said, accept your lot. This is your lot. This is your lot. Accept your lot. There's a ton of things you and I can never change. It doesn't matter what I do. I'm never going to be taller. I'm never going to be shorter. I'm always going to be scrawny. I'm never going to be like, I'm not going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger. As much as I want to, I don't care how much creatine I eat, I'm never going to be him. I'm just not built that way. I got to be okay with it. There's certain things you're just not going to change. Your hair, the texture of your hair. Some of you are like Chewbacca, like you grow a beard in 15 minutes. Like, okay, that's the way you are. Nothing wrong with it. Some people are funny. Some people are funny looking. It's okay. You learn, all right, this is who I am. And you can fight it all you want. It's not going to help you. I tell this story all the time. I was 12 years old. I had one dream. I idolized Joe Montana. Like he was my hero. I wanted to be an NFL quarterback. Went to a Foursquare youth group at Foursquare Church. And great guy, but the youth pastor one time said this. He said, if you guys will memorize scripture, God will give you anything you want. I was like, sign me up. Because I want to be an NFL quarterback. How much do I need to memorize? Entire thing? I'll do it. I'm not driven. Tell me. Well, that same year, I went out for football, eighth grade, North Middle School. First year ever. Had been gone to a private school. They didn't have those athletes. Decide, I'm going to go out for football. I didn't kind of know when it was starting. I was still trying to figure out the ropes. So they had actually practiced the summer before school starts. So I show up. I'm like one of the last guys to sign up. And they don't have any gear left except for this helmet that it was giant. I think it had the Rock on the back of it. So just got this gigantic helmet on. I get out there. The coach is like, hey, run this kind of route and we're gonna throw the ball to you. I run out the route. I turn. The helmet does not turn. Like it stays. The ball hits me in the head and bounces off. The coach just said, hey, stand over there. So for the rest of practice, I stood over there with the kid that had the broken arm. I went, yeah, this isn't gonna happen. That's okay. I'm not built to be an NFL quarterback. I can accept that. No problem. You learn, this is who I am. This is how God designed me. And I'm okay with that, right? If you're not funny, don't be a comedian. It will be funny, but in the wrong way, not the way that you want. So you just kind of learn like, okay. Psalm 139 says that every single one of us has been fearfully and wonderfully made. Great are his works. You and I are his workmanship. And then the psalmist says, and my soul knows it's right. I know how God has designed me. Figure out my lot, where I fit. I talked last week about looks maxing and how young men are doing all these crazy things to make themselves look like they think they're supposed to look. It's insanity. Well, guess what? Newsflash, women do it too. Crazy. So here's an article about it. It's called The New Rise of Female Looks Maxing. And this article, super sad. There are these forums and these apps that you upload pictures of yourself on, and people just pick you apart. The internet just picks you apart, just any little flaw that they might see. Or then you put it into apps that put it into some kind of AI that says, this is how you should look, and here's how you can look that way. Just hundreds of thousands of dollars of surgery. And so the main person they interview is this gal, and she's like a 9 or a 10, just extremely beautiful 18-year-old who has been obsessed with it since she was like 13. And she says this, I spend 3 or 4 hours a day obsessing about my flaws. And she's the most beautiful girl ever. So this psychiatrist that they interviewed said, these forums and these apps, he said this, I would rather have my kids addicted to smoking cigarettes than to be on these forums and apps. It is destroying their souls because there's no satisfaction. It doesn't, you can keep going forever. Accept how God has made you. Be okay with it. Bloom where you're planted. Realize you're fearfully and wonderfully made. Great is God's work and you are his workmanship. Accept that. Okay. Lord, you have me for this specific purpose and I trust you in it. And then lastly, shalom. If you look at these verses, God has given. God has given. It is a gift of God. And when you get this, God will keep you occupied with joy. That was one of my favorite verses in the book of Ecclesiastes. I want to be occupied with joy. How do I do that? Realize life is a gift. That's how. How does gratitude make me someone that has joy? It's called positive interpretation bias. That's how. That life is not 100% bad, it's not 100% good. We studied chapter 3. There's ups and there's downs, there's easy and there's hard, there's all that. It's all mixed together, it's all beautiful, it's all brilliant. But what's so important about us is how we think about it. So I was talking with a guy a couple weeks ago, young family, great young man, working hard, has his own business, been looking for a house, just recently bought a house and has a shop on it. He's telling me he was just so excited, like, yeah, man, I got all these plans for this house. And I'm talking to him a little bit later. He's like, he was working on something. He goes, man, I was so frustrated. I'm in my shop. I'm just so frustrated. I said, where were you at? He goes, I was in my shop. I was so frustrated. I said, no. Where were you at? I was in my shop. I said, think about a year ago, what you just said. I was in my shop. Wow. Yes, I'm in my shop. I've been looking for a house for years. I finally have my house. I'm in my shop. That's positive interpretation bias. This shop is a gift from you, God. Thank you. Thank you. It's James 1:17, every good and perfect gift comes from God. Thank you. It's Romans 8:32. That if God did not spare his only son, but delivered him up for us, how shall he not with him give us every good thing? It's Psalm 34:10. Those that seek the Lord will lack no good thing. It's Psalm 84:10. No good thing will the Lord hold from those that do what is right. Psalm 23:6. Surely goodness and mercy will chase me down for my entire life. That's positive interpretation bias. God, you've been so good to me. Life is a gift. I'm not gonna be having the appetite of out there, I mean, right now, the side of my eyes. God, what you put in front of me right now, that's what I'm gonna be stoked with. Not the missing tile syndrome, the 999 that are going really well today. That's how, and you get occupied with joy. And so while we end with communion, there's no better way than knowing the goodness of God than coming to the table